But you're not going like, oh, I love this stuff. You're going, this is horrible. What happens is when you look back on the story, because you know the ending, you know you survived it, of course you go, well, this is great.
All right, this is J.W. Oliver with another round of Do Hard Stuff, and got a great special guest on, Steve Biltz. Steve, how are you?
Doing well, J.W., thank you.
Look at you up in Pennsylvania with the sun shining, and I'm here in Texas with a little bit of a gloomy cloud outside, so...
I'll take it while I can get it out here.
That's right. That's right. We're avoiding all the bad weather, so that's good. Well, Steve, you are the CEO and co-founder of two companies in the dental sector with almost 700 practices and 7,000 plus providers and employees providing care for nearly 3 million people annually. That's amazing. And focus on organizational purpose and rewarding relationships under a comprehensive vision of smiles for everyone. Smile Brands affiliated offices have a combined Google rating of 4.4 and a Glassdoor rating of 4.2. I love this. And a 90%+ employee recommendation rating. That's impressive. I don't know if 90%, I don't even know if 10% of the people like me. So, I mean, that's, you're doing great. The company is listed as the 100 best places to work in the U.S. by Glassdoor. And I think the biggest part is Smiles for Everyone Foundation is a public nonprofit 501c3 providing free dental care throughout international trips and ongoing local outpost in, I believe now 9 countries, right? Not 7 in Africa, Asia, South America. Steve, thanks for jumping on here. I know you're super busy and I appreciate you taking a little time.
No, this is great. I'm excited to be here.
So you're not a dentist. I'm not a dentist. We're both in the dental business. How in the world did you get here?
Well, boy. I think I ask myself that every morning for either good reasons or bad. You know, it's either how did I get here or how did I get here? I don't know which one sometimes. You know, I had spent my career, started out around healthcare services, even when I was in public accounting. And then I became the lead financial guy for a rehab rehabilitation services company, speech occupational physical therapy, and then for a big dialysis company. And then we had a division in all kinds of different physician specialties, you know, 15 different physician specialties. And, you know, I always loved healthcare because of the opportunity to drive purpose. But the frustrating part in healthcare was it wasn't consumer led. You know, when you go back to when we started the company, it was very much you go where your insurance company tells you, and patients weren't terribly educated about their own care. They weren't making their own decisions. And when I came across dentistry, it was after a time when we had part of a public company and we sold it. And then I had an opportunity to kind of figure out what was next. And I loved, you know, brought up around business principles. You know, my parents and my grandparents were all in the apparel business. And that was very capitalistic, if you will, right? People like your stuff and they buy it. And if you can't keep your brand fresh and alive, you go out of business. And you know, I like that part of business, but I like the purpose of healthcare. And dentistry was an opportunity where, because of the structural design, where insurance isn't really insurance, it's a benefit plan, people feel qualified to say, I have a great dentist, and they recommend others to go, and half the country wasn't in regular care. It felt like if you could come with a model that was high service, high touch, high value, that you could actually create a business there that differentiated itself. And that was really the genesis of getting started way back in 98. Then we came to it and realized it was a lot harder to execute than one might hope. You know, there's a lot of complexity to dentistry too, because the patient's engaged, because the patient has to pay for care, because every procedure has one or two or three or more substitutes for it. And, you know, it was complicated. We solved that initially with culture. We just got the culture and the relationship model right, the one-to-one relationship with the providers, the relationship with the dental office teams. And just focusing on that was kind of lightning in a bottle for us. And so, you know, to make a long launch story short, we came out of the gates, struggled mightily. The sector had never really seen a successful investment cycle from a private equity firm. A number of companies had come public because of the nature of the market back in the mid late 90s. They were all struggling. When we got this model right,
all of a sudden we were able to not just attract private equity in, but we were able to get that private equity firm to say, wow, you've kind of got something different. We bought two public companies, took them private, and then completed the first successful private equity exit that the space had seen. And, you know, suddenly things were different in the sector.
Yeah, that's dentistry's changed. I first came into dentistry really in 86, working right out of, I was in college, actually working for a small dental supply company. And I can remember when the first company, it was a place called Dental Works in Texas.
Oh, yeah.
He placed an advertisement in a newspaper. Yeah. And I mean, the whole community went nuts, right? Like, that's unethical. You can't advertise. You needed to have, Dr. J.W. Oliver and your address and your phone number in the phone book. And that was it, right? You got to go find it or you get a referral.
You know, there's an origin story about that. Going back to California years and years ago, it was illegal to advertise in any profession, but in dentistry up until fairly recently. But at one point there was a doctor named Parker in California, and he was advertising painless dentistry. And they said, that's advertising superiority in service, and that's illegal. We're going to take your license. And so being an entrepreneur, which is the nature of this podcast, being an entrepreneur, he said, okay, I can't get around that law. But what I can do is go down to the courthouse and change my first name to Painless. And he became Dr. Painless Parker, and he could advertise under his own name.
Wow, that's genius. I didn't know that story, and I'm going to use that one a lot now. That's actually genius.
Seen the sign, when we first got into the space, a guy we knew that we were talking to had his actual sign.
Dr. Painless Parker.
Dr. Painless.
Wow.
Real guy.
Well, it's interesting, and I think it kind of comes into what you're saying when you talk about, even today, especially if you're of maybe my age or a little older, you pictured, my sister posted something recently of an old SS White dental chair, the pink one with a big stand and the rotary and all the belts and the, that's kind of how you view dentistry, right? You're like, it's somewhere where you go only because I've got a toothache. You don't go for preventative care. You don't go for cosmetic dentistry. You don't go for health and wellness reasons. I mean, there's now the studies are just crazy about how it affects your overall health, right? So having that smiles for everyone. I know you told the story of when you first started the foundation. We can talk a little bit about that, about visiting the child there, but that's an opportunity that it really affects your health. But I want to pivot just a minute, because then I want to get talking about your foundation, because I think it's really, really, really cool what you're doing. But being an entrepreneur, it's funny, I have people today that see what I've done and they'll say, wow, it must be nice. It must be easy doing what you do every day. Wow, you just get to travel and you get to do this. And I'm always thinking, I've been broke 3 times. I've had to rethink things over and over. I used to work literally 7 days a week, 12, 14 hour days. My wife used to say, you kissed our son, who's now 30, used to kiss our son goodbye in the morning and kiss him at night, and he was in bed both times. And so what is it like? What do people not see today? Or what do people see today that they don't see from when you started this entrepreneurial journey as well?
You know, it's such a big question. And obviously you've been through the battles on it. And so, and I want to think about it without the notion of like, your generation just doesn't know, you don't understand. Cause that's not reality, right? There's a lot of people who do know and they do get it. But there's a couple things. Number one, and I like the way you told the story, and I know you have a lot more texture to it, because one of the things that throws, I think, whether you want to call them young people or budding entrepreneurs or whoever, because you can start at any time, right? Is that when you hear someone like you talk about your journey, or perhaps me, or certainly a motivational speaker, and they tell you about the really dark days and the tough times, and people hear them and they get the impression that you embrace those times when they hit. Like, you were just like, all right, a challenge, I'm taking this on. And you know what? it makes it seem like you're wired differently than the average person, which makes it less accessible to the average person. And so one of the things I like to really pause on is in the moment when that's going on, it's abject fear for all of us. It's terrifying. It's not like, woohoo, challenge, I'm excited, bring it on. I'll, you know, like, tie me to the mast and bring on what you got. Like, I'm Lieutenant Dan in Forrest Gump, right? It's not that. It's like, I hate this. I'm miserable. But you have to put one foot in front of the other because you did just kiss your son goodbye and you got to keep a roof over his head, right? And you took this on, but you're competing. But you're not going like, oh, I love this stuff. You're going, this is horrible. What happens is when you look back on the story, because you know the ending, you know you survived it, of course you go, well, this is great. And there is some truth to that. Like, our mosaic of our lives is richer because of the struggles. The stories we'll tell from the rocking chair are richer because of the struggles. But don't conflate that with thinking we loved it at the moment. We hated it. It was terrifying. It was miserable. I wished I was just cashing a paycheck and not thinking about it. Like, yeah, that is true. So when you're starting as an entrepreneur or you're thinking about doing it, and you're going, oh my God, I'm scared. That's good. By the way, if you're going to fight a dragon, you should be scared or you'll be dead very quickly, right? So it's good to be scared. Now, can you overcome that? Can you move forward? Can you take on that challenge? You can do it. But don't expect it to feel good. And I think that's where people get misled. They hear the inspirational speaker and it's like, oh, so you embrace the challenge. That's misleading. Face the challenge. Yeah. Step through the challenge, but you're gonna be scared. You might run to the bathroom and throw up a few times. I've had days where I literally was like, I'm going back to bed. And I went back to bed for an hour and started. I'm gonna try to start over because this day is so bad. I just got to go back to bed and try to get, you know, I mean, like,
well, and I mean, I'm sure you've been, I mean, I can remember some of those. And I think that's a really good point. I've really never framed it quite like that. Because you can look back on them today and say, hey, that was a great learning experience for me. But during that moment, I was like, Lord, please extract me from this moment because I'm tired of it. And I remember thinking I had like stomach cancer because my stomach hurts so bad, you know? And I mean, just you're like, my stomach hurts. And you realize it was just the stress and the turmoil that you were going through. And did I enjoy any of that? No, not at all. None of it. There's no way.
Yeah. And I think that kind of honesty is better for people who are in that entrepreneurial journey going, oh my God, I'm terrified. Yeah, you're supposed to be. It's okay. You know,
I think the difference too there is you do develop a little bit more, maybe you do develop a little more thick skin and you're able to push through those more difficult times. Or when maybe something difficult does come up, you go, okay, whatever. I'm just going to push through it, right? I'm going to make it through it. But
yes, experience helps you do that.
Exactly.
100%. Helps you say, we can get through this.
And it's just realizing that, you know, what is that? Maxwell says failing forward. And I love a lot of those words about, you know, the Abraham Lincoln thing where he's failed, I don't know, 20 times and he only succeeded twice. And you always remember him as a successful person. And I think that's true. Mm-hmm. And you're going to find those successful times, but you are going to go through some dark days that you don't enjoy. I recently did hear one of a really good saying. It said, you want to do what I do, but you don't want to do what I've done. And yeah. I think that's my kids. I'm like, you guys think that I got here a different way and it's not true. Yeah. I think it is kind of seeing that journey, but I'm guessing we're similar in vintage, time wise and in the business, et cetera. What we're able to maybe enjoy today is different than what you enjoyed 10 or 20 or 30 years ago, right? And part of that's the journey. And I think now you do get to realize, I have to say, you get smarter too. You learn to delegate more. You learn not to get involved in the micromanaging. Let somebody else mess with that and I don't need to be involved.
Yeah.
And that some of that's come to me recently, right? Like, yeah. I've just figured that out. Like, oh, I don't need to be involved in that. Is that still a journey you find yourself on too?
Oh yeah, for sure. And then, you know, and it's funny you're talking about it and some other sayings, you know, they pop to mind, but you know, it's like, you know, failure is temporary and unfortunately success is temporary.
Yeah.
You know, and so you're constantly relearning, reinventing, you know, what's two in the details one day might not be two in the details the next because of what's going on in the business or where the business is seeing turmoil. And so I think experience does enable you to understand where you need to apply effort or change and where you can let people have more rein to run, for sure. And you know, the this too that shall pass notion is there, right? I mean, you know, we're impacted by the macro that we operate in, and we're also impacted by our decisions. And the impact of those sometimes has a really long tail, right? So, you know, can you appreciate the fact that your performance today is probably stuff you decided 6 to 18 months ago, which then you go, okay, then my performance tomorrow is still going to be that old stuff. And what I'm deciding today is going to impact me somewhere further downfield, which arguably helps you bring perspective to what's happening today and patience to what you can actually impact. And I would say the bigger you get, the longer those tails are on each end, which is probably the big learning experience. You know, it's like, wow, okay, we really got to understand today is an impact. You know, it's, these are decisions we made a long time ago, and then we're going to change them, you know, slowly. So let's prepare everyone for that. You know?
Yeah, that's an interesting perspective because you're right. You know, when you, the things 5 years ago, even in our business, I could just make a change and we could pivot the whole company in, you know, a few days. We're like going in a new direction, got a new marketing plan and new systems. And now you really got to think through those. And then do you have all the support? And I'm still one of those big picture, like, okay, can we do this by Friday? And they're like, maybe by December, but not Friday. Yeah. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, that's a different Friday. But yeah, but so now, your motto, the smiles for everyone, you now have that as a foundation. Tell a little bit, because I think this is what I do know this. When you're younger, you're career mastered, you're looking to increase your, you know, your family's life and their surroundings, and you want to impact your kids and your church and your community. And then you start getting to at least where I'm at, and you start thinking about what's the legacy you leave, what's the impact you make, and how do I make a bigger impact? And your Smiles for Everyone Foundation is really cool, not only because it's doing great work, but very scalable. Yes. And I think that's what I was most impressed when you kind of introduced me to this concept of growing this through these outposts. And so tell a little bit about that, because it's impactful in a massive way for a lot of places.
And it has this potential to be so much more as we lock arms around it. So if you want to indulge the I Have a Dream speech from me on it, I'm happy to share it, as you know, at all times. But I think maybe roll back, if it makes sense, JW, to the origin story. So, you know, we started the foundation in 2005, and it quickly won a few American Red Cross humanitarian awards and was doing the kind of things, you know, corporate foundations do, is raising money and giving it away. And that was fine. There's nothing wrong with it. And so anytime I say what we're doing and what we changed from, it's not a criticism of anything that anyone's doing. It's just, is there a unique way we can do things? And ultimately, as you'll hear in the I Have a Dream part, inspire others to maybe do the same things with their level of influence. So, you know, we were raising money, giving it away. And, you know, I was no better than anyone else at doing that. I was a CEO and I had lots of people I could talk to. So we'd raise money in six-figure chunks and give it away. And it's a good thing, right? We're giving it to people who needed it. But it's a little exhausting because I'm constantly raising money and giving it away.
So we always said, wow, you know, we're in the dental business. Why don't we at least take our team and go do some sort of a charitable mission where we're helping people directly? And, you know, you can argue that's pretty cool because it's the business we're in. Is it as impactful as giving away six-figure numbers? Maybe yes, maybe no. But we did it. So we organized a trip in 2011. We go down to Paraguay and we're just going to go for a week, six or so dentists, six or so lay people, local, you know, team that we were connecting with. And we're there the first day and we're providing care and it's pretty deep need. Kids had never seen the dentist. They were all at an orphanage. And, you know, we had a lot of ankyloid teeth and a lot of just general decay and rot and pain. And, you know, we were able to address a lot of issues on that first day. And we thought, well, this is pretty good. You know, we're taking care of these people. The next morning, we're touring the orphanage. And, you know, I see a young boy in a bed and his name is Ramon. And they said, you know, Ramon couldn't come upstairs this morning because he was feeling, you know, yesterday he couldn't get to the clinic because he wasn't feeling well. So for some reason, you know, having a half day of clinical field experience and being a CPA, I think I better go take a look. So I go over
there. If this kid has any health issues. Yeah.
Maybe he needs his taxes done or something. I don't know. So I drop over and, you know, I kind of said, Ramon, are you okay? And he rolled over and he has an abscess on the side of his face, size of a golf ball. So I called someone qualified over, one of our oral surgeons, and I said, can you take a look at this? He goes, oh gosh, let's take him upstairs. So he and I take him upstairs and drain a bunch of fluid out of his, you know, this abscess. And I look at this very cool customer oral surgeon and he's white as a ghost. And I said, what's going on? And he said, honestly, I don't think he would have got out of bed. And I said, oh my God, okay. And it didn't hit me at that moment, but I was like, wow, okay, that's kind of a big deal. And an hour passed and I was kind of bothered by it. And so I finally, you know, stopped and took the gloves off and went to the side and I was talking to a couple of our people and our local NGO. And I'm like, what happens next Tuesday if no one's here to the next Ramon? And I said, you know, if we left, and there were some local doctors helping us. I said, if I left my equipment here, if I left the supplies here, you know, could you just come back, I don't know, once a month or at least be on call if, you know, the woman who ran the orphanage named Patricia, if she had a problem? He says, well, a guy named Judah. Judah says, well, yeah, you'd probably have to give me some gas money. And I'm like, okay, done. I'll give you gas money. And the notion of a mission trip turned into the notion of an outpost. So we were there and on the ground and providing the locals what they needed to provide the care. So you flash forward to today, and now we've enlisted, say, our supply chain. So they donate supplies. We have, you know, so Henry Schein helps us with that. We have an equipment manufacturer that does mobile equipment called Aseptico. Aseptico has been giving us equipment for over a decade. And suddenly, you know, while we're paying for gas, we're not paying for a lot of other things. And so whereas you take that charity model where I'm raising all that money and maybe getting 50, 60, 70 cents of care on the ground, now I'm investing a dollar and delivering $25 or more of care. So we've completely inverted the model to say, let's create this leverage. And it's all local driven. Every outpost is different. The NGO owns it. We organize it. We breathe life into it. We keep them focused. We organize getting them supplies. We organize, you know, getting them continuing education if the doctors need it. But it's them doing the work. We'll go visit, which is great to support them, but it's them owning it. So now you've taken this model of let's fly in once every few years and provide a week of care to let's enable locals to provide care day in, day out. So now you say, wow, this thing just flipped the charity model from 0.7 to 1 to 25x. That's pretty different. The important thing to know, though, is it's you could say, oh, well, you're a dental company. You're providing dental care. You did it. That's easy. It's like, no. Nothing I do day to day is what's happening in these outposts. What is happening, and this is where I'd like to challenge every CEO in America and around the world to do something like this, and this I'll get to this part in a second, is I do have undue influence in the dental space. I have lots of dentists who work with me. I have suppliers who I know really well. Like, so we have this opportunity to say, hey guys, if you want to get a force multiplier on your giving, check out this model. So now I say, okay, I got this foundation. It's a 501c3. As you know, it's a lot to have a charity. There's a lot of infrastructure, there's reporting. So everyone reinventing that wheel doesn't make a ton of sense. So why not make the tent bigger and reach out to others who say, I'd love to help support another country and another country. And now the big dream is that our dental sector creates something bigger than ever has existed from a charitable organization standpoint, providing care all over the world. And then, by the way, when that happens, that's a lot of good, right? There's a massive force multiplier there, hundreds and hundreds of thousands or millions of people getting care that could never get it, because these people never get care. Like when we deliver care at these outposts, these are people who are getting care that's the equivalent of a year's gross income or more. Like it's never going to happen. Never. Their kids would never get the care. They just suffer and they're in pain.
So, and to be fair, there's not even the resources, right? You don't have a dental office in that local area. It's not even there.
We're sometimes driving 4 or 5 hours, you know, to get to them to set up these dental operations. There's no chance. So that's happening. Now, if we could then put that model up and say every sector, in order to compete, has this value chain they could leverage to help in a charitable way all over the world, I think you change the world. Like that's a literal change the world. So there's this opportunity to do this. And, you know, we search our whole lives for something like that. Right? Search our whole lives to change one life, to help one person, let alone for the opportunity to make a true impact. And so this has it. I've seen it every day. I know you've seen it now up close. Like it can change these lives, and it's using the resources we have, and we have to sharpen every day to stay competitive in our businesses. They can be used this way to change the world. So we're inviting people in. You know, we have a couple outside sponsors. You're now doing it. You're the third one in the industry that's come in. It's fantastic. By the way, you guys have come in the biggest way. So thank you. and we're going to invite others in, because it's not about me saying, I want this for just me or just Smile Brands. It's saying, like, let's figure out how we can really make global impact and then throw down the gauntlet to every other space out there and say, if we can do it, and we're just dumb old dental, you guys could certainly do it, right? Come on, show me what you got. And then, boy, would that be a fun competition to have people on our heels chasing us in other sectors going, we're impacting more people than you. It's like, well, I don't know if you read our latest, because now you're behind again. That would be fun, right?
That would be a good challenge, yeah.
Yeah, that would be a good challenge. We'd be thrilled. Hey, pass us, but you better keep moving because we're going fast. So I think there's this really big opportunity. And I go back, I mean, I was in the field 4 hours before that tap came. And I don't say this lightly, but that was hand of God kind of stuff where you get a tap on the shoulder and Ramon is put in my pathway 4 hours after I get there. And we figure out how to be helpful, and then, oh my goodness, it changed the entire trajectory of what we were doing. You know, that's hard to not see as a bigger picture, you know, however you want to look at the universe, you know, fate, opportunity, you know, the right time in your life, the right experience, hand to God, you pick. But it was pretty miraculous.
Well, I would say this. It's like when people, you know, I've been in the dental business a long time. I surely had no idea I was going to be in Zimbabwe and Zambia and now Rwanda and Costa Rica and all these places. But an opportunity, I believe God opened up a door and I walked through it. Yeah. And I would say the same for you. You're in Paraguay and God opened up a door that Ramon was setting in, and you could have not checked on Ramon. You could have just, I'm busy, I'm got to get on to my own thing. And so I think that's what it is. But Steve, what I love about this is it's very scalable. You're now on country number 9. Looking at, I know we're encouraging you to do 3 more countries that we want to be a part of, in Zambia, Zimbabwe, and Costa Rica. But it's really infinite, right? Not only in the dental space, because it's very cost effective for another CEO of another DSO to come in and say, hey, we've been looking for a way to see how we can make an impact. You know, our mission statement is transforming lives while making a global impact. And this is the kind of stuff that is a global impact. It changes lives, and it is life transforming more so than, I love it when people, you know, go build homes and go read a book and go visit and do some things that are very, very mission minded. Yep. But getting your health in order is very life changing, right? And that is what is really making a difference. And I love the fact that this could be done in optometry and ophthalmology. It could be done in all kinds of different healthcare areas too.
Well, and I think it can be done in every lane. It just should be your lane. So yeah. There's nothing wrong with going, and I've taken my family to build the house, and it's a great experience.
Absolutely.
But if a home builder was doing that and leveraging their supply chain and their expertise, you'd probably get a different equation.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just think there's nothing wrong with any of those. Again, I'm not critical of anything. It's just, if you're in a business and you have to compete successfully over time in a capitalistic society, you're getting good at an awful lot of things that are highly leverageable to give back. And that's the challenge I think is really interesting. It's like, deconstruct that value chain you have and figure out what those tools are that you are using to deliver. And how do those play? Because again, it's not like, what I know how to do as a business is operate dental offices domestically in community. Yeah, that's very different than an outpost in Rwanda.
But right.
But the understanding of that and the leverage of our supply chain or our value chain enables us to put them in a position where their biggest expense might be dental supplies. Well, we should be able to get those to them for free because, for in this case, Henry Schein is also mission-driven, and they want to find places to give these away where they know they'll get used. Turns out I have an idea for you. So they partner. So, you know, and then you guys have people on the ground in Rwanda, or you will. You have people on the ground in Zimbabwe. Like, okay, let's think about that. How does that help us? And how do we deliver? And so the foundation, Smiles for Everyone, is an independent foundation. It wants to partner with people who want to make a difference. Smile Brands has supported it for, you know, over 15 years now, providing all the infrastructure and that support. But we don't need to be visible local if someone else wants to utilize our infrastructure to deliver locally, because we just want the foundation to change lives. And we'll backstop it. We always have. But the more people that come in, like you said, for someone to turn around and spend the candidly millions of dollars that we've spent setting up all this infrastructure all these many years, rather than just immediately get their money to work helping people, it's nonsense, right? It makes no sense. You're not, if you're doing that, you're focused on something other than how do I start helping people immediately? And by the way, the banners can be all yours. The days, they're yours. You know, there's direct connection to the people being helped. Your people can go over and visit if they want to get engaged and help that outpost. Like it's ready made. And that's the big dream, because that's where you're saying, I want every dollar to be efficient. I want every dollar to be giving back. I don't want to have years of spinning my wheels getting started, because that's the hardest part, as you know, going back to your entrepreneurial part.
Getting started,
People think about, oh, I was going to start a business. I've been thinking about starting that for 20 years. That's common. This is like, don't think about starting. Just contact us and let's get you started. And you don't even have a commitment, long-term commitment. Just get started and it's fine. Let's go.
I think, too, a real important piece of this is I believe there are literally probably hundreds of other even dental organizations that would like to get involved. They would like to help. They could put up $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 a year and say, hey, we want to be involved. It's just like Shine. It's just like a Septico. Same with me. I don't, you know, a Septico may be going, we'd love to be involved, but we just don't know where to start. We don't know who to go to, who to trust, but because of your relationships.
Yep.
And because of your relationships with Henry Schein and also with us, we can say, oh, well, we trust Steve and his organization. We're behind it, right? We're all in. And so I think that makes this easy, because I really believe that most people's hearts is they want to be helpful. They want to make an impact. They want to know what can they do, but they don't want to write a check to XYZ company, not really knowing where those dollars are going. And I think that's impactful.
It's so true. And it's hard. And that's why, you know, we have these relationships with these local NGOs, but we also monitor them very closely. So they get a quarter's worth of money. We audit the care given, the amount of activity. And look, sometimes things happen, right? There's floods and hurricanes and coups and God knows what happens sometimes. And sometimes you say, it's okay. You didn't get to go out that much this quarter. You still have our money though. So use it next quarter and go out. And then we just hold on to the money and wait and make sure they're moving forward. So it's not a negative thing. It's just a look, this is a discipline thing we have where we every time say, this is how we expect this to go, maintain the relationship, coach them through kind of how this works, coach them through talking to their volunteers about how that works. And it's not a, you know, endless supply of money. It's a very efficient charity that we need to keep efficient. That's a promise we make to all of our donors, you know, and we've maintained that discipline over the years. So it is, we are really careful with that, not to get out over our skis and just say, oh, send out the money and I'm sure good stuff's happening. It's like, no. It is trust in terms of, yes, you have your money before you go out, but it's verified because there's no more money coming until we're verifying that the activity we're talking about is happening. And again, it's not a negative, like, oh, you're bad if you didn't do it, because a lot happens in these countries. As you know, it can be hard. But I will tell you, we've lost, knock on wood, zero NGOs. And these NGOs have been through, I mean, literal coups that they've maintained. They've crossed floodwaters to get places. You know, they've ridden, believe it or not, donkeys to get places. I mean, they do crazy things. And we're very supportive. And if they run into snags, they run into snags. But we always coach them through it and make sure they understand, like, nope, we still have a promise to the donors. And that's what keeps you guys getting the donors. And it's okay. The donors actually like when we tell them we had to wait for a half donation for this quarter for this outpost because they had these issues. And the outpost says, oh, okay. So it's not because you're mad at me. It's because, you know, you're maintaining my chain, and they love that. So it's really worked well and been, you know, synergy driven, or, you know, underlying synergy. And they understand it. We understand it. But it takes that day-to-day management, which is all the foundation needs to exist for. The infrastructure, the day-to-day management. And then we are happy to have people sponsor the whole outpost. Just take it on. And we're half of one. You know, whatever works in. And again, we're not asking people to have, they don't know as much as I know. So they don't have to say, I'll do it forever. Just try it. Because once you get started, you'll see the impact and you'll be like, okay, this makes sense to me. I get it. I see the people. Go visit. You know, again, we're wide open book. You know, your guys are going down to visit. We're like, hey, just go. It's fine. We love it. And we're open. You'll have tips. We're continuing to grow and learn. It's awesome.
Honey, you mentioned that I heard, I believe it was actually a pastor said it years ago, and I've used it a couple of times, and said, delegation without investigation is simply relegation. And you can't just throw stuff out there and not follow up, you know, so trust but verify, things like that. And I think that's what good NGOs, that's what good nonprofits do when they're wanting to see that things are, because there's a lot of corruption in the world. There's a lot of people taking advantage of nonprofits and this, but that's what makes this one unique.
Yeah, and you set them up for failure when you don't watch closely. You really
exactly.
do, right? Because a little
You're
bit
of asking
transition
them to do
happens.
That.
Yeah, a little bit of transition happens. They have a quarter where they don't get out as much, but they still get the same amount of money. You know, that starts to just naturally, it's just human nature. Oh, well, if I only go out that much, I get more. Now, if I want to go out more, I just ask for more money. Then I'm, you know, and you create inefficiency. So you do much better just staying very close to it. And that's kind of been my role, you know, as chairman of it, is every now and then, you know, our GM who runs it, well, you know, here's all the reasons why, you know, it's probably okay. But no. It's not mad at them. Make sure they understand that. But that stuff happened. And so we're just going to titrate and catch back up and go. And, you know, that has been a good formula for us. And I think you owe it to people. I mean, you owe it to people in your business day to day. That's why you have KPIs. That's why you have those metrics you use. But you, especially in these situations, just need to do it.
Got to be the same. Yeah, it definitely has to be the same.
Yeah.
Well, Steve, this is phenomenal. I mean, I think that's you obviously built an incredible business here, and it's impactful. But I love when you're able to see how you're being impactful in places that you never probably thought you would ever even spell the name, much less a visit. Right? I mean, that's tough.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. Like we've been to Paraguay. Obviously, been in Paraguay for must be 15 years now. But I've been down several times personally, and they'll always ask me, well, why Paraguay? And I have to admit, I couldn't have found it on a map before we went down there the first time.
Yeah.
But what I've kind of come to say is, why not Paraguay? Like, why not? Right? And it turns out there's massive need. And and we do try to select based on areas of the greatest need from a dental perspective. That's one of the criteria we use. But, it's a big world, but you only impact it by moving and doing, right? And that's one of the reasons, when I talk about the dream of expanding the tent and getting people in, it's because I look at the number of countries that desperately need this, and there's no limit. It's pure abundance. Let's go. Let's figure it out. Let's make an impact. Let's make an impact as a sector. Let's do it as efficiently as possible. And by the way, the bigger it gets, the more people that come in, the more that one for 25 becomes bigger, because
yeah.
I don't have all the contacts. I don't have all the leverage, but the more people we bring in the tent, the more leverage we create. And then the more we impact the world, and the more that this becomes a model that we can put up for other sectors. And then suddenly you look up and you go, wow, that actually made a little dent in the universe, as Jobs used to say. That will. And I do think the foundation has already, when you're getting to the numbers it's treating, we're over the $100 million mark last year in lifetime care delivered.
Wow.
And that's just the way we've been limping along, quote unquote. You start taking the force multiplier that we're talking about, with you guys and others in the sector, those numbers can be pretty impactful. And, you care, you don't care. Well, you care because they're attention getting. You go to another sector and say, look at this, and they go, whoa. We could do something like that. That matters. And so, as with most things, if you're doing it for the right reasons, you want to put it out there, and then you want to invite people into the tent. And I know you've been big on this. You've been pushing me on it, which I love, is like, let's get that invitation out there and, challenge people to get started, because every day that passes is a day they could have been making an impact.
Another Ramon. Yeah.
And that's another country we're a day longer to get to. Another visit, that outpost. Because by the way, our existing outposts could go out a lot more than they do. Right. So there's more we could do. And, get started. And again, we're not asking people to make, it's going to be right for you for a lifetime. But I guarantee you, if you get started, you're not going to go like, I want to go create all this infrastructure myself. Because it's years.
No. Yeah. We support some kids down in Haiti. I've had a nonprofit since 2011, and even thinking about doing that in another country is like, whoa, that's just a lot of work. No, this was enough just with one. So yeah, the complexity. So Steve, if somebody wanted to get involved, what's the best way to contact you to find out more about this?
Just email me, steve.built@smilebrands.com. Most of these people probably already have my email address somewhere. Email me, steve.built@smilebrands.com. Or send me a message on LinkedIn if you can't find me, if my email bounces for some strange reason. And I would love to, get people engaged in it. And like I said, you can sponsor your organization if it's really small. Hell, sponsor a day somewhere. And if it's, if it's a little bigger, sponsor, a day a week or a day a month or what, and there's ways, crawl, walk, run. But I will tell you, and it ties into this point of this entrepreneurial journey, you're not on it until you actually start. The journey of 1,000 miles, it's that first step. It's hard to get started. And, one of the little metaphors I like to share with my team is, three frogs are sitting on a log. One decides to jump into the water. I know I said there'd be no math on this test, but how many frogs are left on the log? You probably thought two, but the answer is no. Thinking about doing something is not doing something. There's three frogs left on that log. You only do it when you actually take the action. So yeah. The point of this invitation is don't think about it. Just do it. Just do it. It's very low risk and you're in the game. That's what we need to do.
Yeah. And I would take it even maybe a little step further. I think another thing, if a lot of dentists will probably hear this because your name's on it. So if you're a dentist and you want to get involved, you can probably volunteer in one of these locations. I can speak for places we're going to be involved in. We could help you with logistics and Rwanda or Zambia or Zimbabwe or Costa Rica or somewhere, and I'm sure even Paraguay and other places. But I love what you pointed out. Just get started. If you want to donate $500 next year and you want to help out one outpost and you want to do that in one of the countries that currently operating, just start there. Just start, right? Yeah. And I think you're going to find that it's making an impact. And I like your picture of this. Right now, I'll guarantee you, probably in one of those nine countries, but for sure in some countries, there is a Ramon. He is sitting on a bed. He is suffering for something. He has no way forward.
Yep.
And we got to get started. So just get started.
100%. Well said. Absolutely.
Steve, this is great. I had 27 other questions I didn't get to. So we'll find 4 hours to do that later. But
we'd love to do it again. So whenever you're ready, we'll go hit them.
Well, this has been great. And again, contact Steve at Smile Brands. You can email me, jw@supportdds.com. I'll get you headed over to him or his Norm over there so we can get you connected to the right person. But Steve, thanks for joining us. And really,
thank you.
Smiles for everyone. Keep on making an impact. Keep on doing what you're doing. If you're an entrepreneur, just keep going. Don't stop. And if you're looking to make a global impact, get started today. So, Steve, any final words?
I just want to just underscore thanking you and your organization for jumping in the way you have. I think it's a huge difference maker because, you know, people are always like, hey, well, is that okay to jump into, you know, and you heard the story and you've done, you know, you have a VP of philanthropy and you're very experienced in this area. And so, you know, in terms of confirmatory diligence, you know, you jumping in and doing what you're doing, I think is good for everybody. It's great for the foundation. I think it helps people understand that somebody who's from the outside has looked at it very closely and gets it. And, you know, hopefully it helps them make the decision to start because that's really what they got to do. Is just jump.
Well, I can tell you what, I'm going to, just so you know, I'm going to have a QR code. I'm going to, at every time I see somebody, a C-suite at a DSO, I'm going to ask them, are they a part of it yet? And I'm going to be saying, well, get involved, you know, get involved today.
Yeah.
Because it's that impactful and it makes that big of a difference. So I'm going to be your biggest cheerleader for sure.
I love it.
And tell more people about this.
I can't think of a better one. So fantastic. It's great. Thank you, JW.
Well, again, thanks for joining. Do hard stuff and also understanding how you can make a global impact. So until next time, thanks for joining.